Thank you for joining us at the OT Corner with Mrs. K. Please note this podcast does not intend to offer medical advice or therapeutic treatment for any medical condition for either yourself or others. If you have any medical or rehabilitation concerns for yourself or your child, please contact your physician. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the OT Corner with Mrs. K., a school-based occupational therapist bringing you a series of interviews and information on childhood development for kids with all different abilities. So get ready, get set, let's go.
Thank you for joining me today at the OT Corner. Welcome. So glad that you're here. This episode is part two of my discussion with pediatric occupational therapist Carol Conway. The part one, we discussed how occupational therapy has evolved since the 1970s, and a lot of it has to do with legislation and laws, and how IDEA shaped how we delivered our services to students with disabilities. And we also talk about Every Student Succeed Act, ESSA, as we refer to it in these episodes. And how this also not only shapes how we deliver services to students with disabilities, but to all students in general. So today we're going to continue to elaborate a little bit more on ESSA and how we use this with our multi-tiered system of services in the school systems. We also are going to talk about what data collection can look like and how we can measure progress on our students when we write these types of goals. So let's welcome back Carol Conway to the OT Corner. Carol and I continued our conversation about ESSA and also the multi-tiered system of supports that we offer students, all students. And there's three levels. There's a tier one, tier two, and tier three. Your tier one students are going to be the whole student body. So the efforts are going to be applied universally across all students. Tier two students, this intervention is going to be selected for students in a targeted manner. So it's going to be to reduce or eliminate learning difficulties as soon as they're identified. So they're not really brought on to direct services at this point. Then you have your tier three students. These are our students that have some significant or maybe chronic learning issues or developmental issues, and this is when we bring them on to related services such as occupational therapy. So Carol goes into some more in-depth explanation of this as we continue our conversation.
So I looked it up, and because 80% of the children in a school are tier one students that are just in gen ed, 15% would be considered kids at risk. So we talked about some of those situational stressors that kids might have, but those are also kids that might have ADD or ADHD or are on the autism spectrum, but don't quite qualify for services. But think about kids in poverty, kids who have trauma, those are our kids at risk, okay? And then, again, that's 15%. So then our tier three kids are really only 1% to 5% of our kids. Those are the kids who qualify for special education. So ESSA looks at all three of those and says, we care about the mental and physical health of all those students. And that OTs, speech therapists, nurses, psychologists, school counselors, all have a role in supporting our students in all three tiers. And I think about that, and I think about, what I know as an OT, what you know as an OT, and so much of what I do would benefit anyone. So there's this recognition that came from the law that all support people really have a role in supporting all students. We need to figure out how we have to do it. Now, this has been a law since 2015. There are some districts who have not even begun to think about it. The wheels of change are slow. And then I think OTs are like, but wait a minute, I have so much to do. How am I going to do tier one and tier two? So what we say in Every Moment Counts is that you're not going to, you know, we're not asking you to do more. We're going to ask you to do it differently. So I think that's really important. Now, when we look at the tiers and the interventions and promotion, prevention activities, it's important to understand that they don't exist in isolation. What we do for tier three students is helpful for tiers two and one. And what we do for tier one may be very helpful for tier two and three. So we're not siloed at all. So when you talk about lunch buddies, that was actually a tier three intervention because the kids I was seeing were on IEPs and they had goals, but it was a gen ed setting because I had peers. But I also said to teachers, who else would really benefit from being in lunch group? So those were my tier two students. So in my lunch buddies group, I would tell you that I had tier one, two, and three students. I think we have to realize that I was providing tier one and two, tier two services while providing intervention at tier three. So instead of seeing those tier three kids alone, all right, or in a pull-out model one-on-one, I was seeing them in a group in a gen ed setting, addressing all their needs and actually probably much more functional needs because they had to interact with peers. The peers helped them learn some skills. But the interesting thing, Jennifer, is that my kids with disabilities taught my peers so much.
Yes. So
this learning back and forth, which I think is probably one of the most powerful things I learned. If we think long-term about really what we want for kids when they graduate, even when they're in preschool, we need to be thinking long-term because some of our kids maybe need that much more time to learn those skills. Kids really making significant growth in groups. And I think that's what, you know, ESSO is really getting at, is that all kids benefit from things that we can teach them that other, you know, support personnel can teach them. And not only about physical health, but also about mental health. And, you know, they're really, since COVID, such a push in providing mental health services for kids or social emotional support, because we're still seeing after effects. You know, we bring something to the table with a different lens, and as do the different people on the team. And now I think that's what the power of the team is, bringing things from our own lens to help children. And it's such a win-win for both children and adults.
Okay, as educators, we all know that our IEP goals need to be stated in measurable terms, meaning there should be some sort of behavior or outcome that we want to happen. Where is this area of need? We have to label that area of need. And we talked a little bit about that in the last episode, how to label our goals, what is the need that we are trying to work on, and then also what is the level of attainment. So how are they going to attain this? With what accommodations? With what modifications? With how much assistance? And then we have to make sure that we are stating this in a period of time. So is this is going to be at the end of the IEP or within a grading period? So my next question to Carol was, how does she measure this? How is she measuring her progress? Data collection is everything in the educational setting. We have to show progress to the parents. So this next session discusses how Carol suggests we do this data collection and how we measure the progress with this specific approach. I have a question that I'm sure OTs out there would, not only OTs, related service people in general, if they're writing a goal and they are approaching things from this perspective, writing their goals from this perspective. And as you know, data is the thing that drives everything. Data, data, data. So for this type of, this is a little, a different approach. How do you recommend like collecting data for this type of objective or these objectives and goals?
Okay, so that's a great question. I will tell you, since I graduated from OT school in 1981, which is a long time ago, I never really had a lot of instruction on collecting data. I've learned over the years, but I feel like it's not a huge strength of mine. But I'll tell you what I did I felt was really helpful. It was really going in to the teacher. What does the student need to do? You have identified that. So this is, I can tell you what the present level is. So that's my baseline. And then the teacher and I write the goal based on what we want the child to do within within the classroom, within the activity. And we're both collecting data on it. There is not any need for OTs to have separate OT goals. Our goals are about function in school. And, you know, people get caught up on, well, I have to have this really measurable goal. Yes, but we're looking at a measurable activity as opposed to like a foundational bottom-up type of goal. These are top-down. And then we explain it that way. And when, so a lot of time in our MFEs and our IEP meetings, we're doing this idea, I'm in there going, well, I'm working with the teacher. And when I'm in the classroom, this is what I'm doing. So it's this whole different like approach. And so my data doesn't look as the same as many other OTs, but the law doesn't say I have to do it in a certain way. So I found this is a much more, this keeps me more focused on what the child needs within the classroom. So it's a different way of looking at that. There's a lot of websites and things like you can go and look at collaborative goal writing. Again, I go back to content standards, and those are from the state. And so parents don't really push back on those. I will often in the goal or in the present level, put the like numerical number of what the content standard is, so they know what I'm working on. But I want to say it doesn't look like the same, like wrote this many letters correctly or hit the line this many times. They looked at, they're much more of a functional kind of gestalt. Very careful on how we explain it. And then because I've done it with the teacher, she can explain it too. So, you know, Carol and I are working on this because the child needs to do that.
Finally today, Carol and I discuss about every moment counts and all the different types of programming and resources that you can find at that website. Like I said before, Every Moment Counts was created by one of my professors from Cleveland State University in the occupational therapy program, Dr. Susan Basic. And interestingly enough, my daughter was part of the pilot program way back when she was in kindergarten. She is now a junior in high school. So this has really been the evolution of Every Moment Counts has been happening over the span of when my child has been in school. So in this next section, Carol discusses all the different resources, where you can find them. All this is going to be in the show notes as well. And I have been perusing through it myself. And I'll tell you something, I have really started to think about how I am delivering services in the school systems, how I can be more effective, and really going in and asking teachers what a student needs. And I feel like I am doing more for the student, approaching my practice in this manner. Not only that, I have been so surprised at how receptive a lot of the intervention specialists and teachers that I work with have been with this approach, as well as other related service providers, speech therapists, and physical therapists that I work with. I have been collaborating so much lately, and I love it. It's exciting, and I think the students are getting the most out of it. And ESSA is really shaping our scope of practice as we adhere to the law and deliver our services in this way.
So another thing I just want to mention about Tier 1 interventions, everymomentcounts.org has programs that were developed as promotion prevention activities that happen in both the cafeteria and at recess, and they're meant for all students. They can be adapted for any students, so you could take those activities and you could do them in a small group. What we have found is that when we go to schools, principals and teachers are really concerned about cafeterias because of they're sensory overwhelming. Mm. We're moving kids through fast. That's where they have more behavior problems. I would like to suggest that people look at those programs. And the nice thing about Every Moment Counts is like almost a live, a living book is what Dr. Sue Basic calls it, who is the director of our program. And the program's really, everything is free and downloadable, which is unheard of. We just felt so passionately. We had a grant of over $750,000 starting in 2011 or 12 to develop these programs. So there is so much on there. There's our initiatives include things like the cafeteria, comfortable cafeteria, refreshing recess, but there's also embedded strategies where it looks at all those mental health things or social emotional things that you can embed just right into your what you're doing right now. That, you know, it's that whole idea of looking at a lens of mental health when you're doing a preschool activity. It doesn't have to, you don't have to do something separate. You just have to kind of look at it and talk about it differently, like caring connections and movement, some of the movement breaks that you're doing. Those are all things that promote mental health as well as physical health. There's also a program called Calm Moment Cards, which look at 17 situational stressors that happen in school, like transitions to classroom, going to music, going to the cafeteria, taking a test. And in those Calm Moment Cards, they're meant for, they're a tier one intervention. You could give them to a teacher. You could do them in one of your groups. And they have thinking strategies, which would be like behavior cognitive strategies. There would be movement strategies, sensory strategies, and it's all there on these beautiful cards, which you can just print out. And you can give one to a teacher. You could give a lot of people print out all 17 and put them on a ring. But again, can be used as tier one or tier two interventions, but they're useful for all kids. You could just use them in a small group too. So, you know, I would suggest people, if you're struggling on how to do tier one and tier two, to go to everymomentcounts.org, look at their initiatives. There is a whole section on how to integrate your services into natural settings. Like that was the area that I worked most closely on, which is inclusion and integration, because you can't do these programs if you're doing isolated therapy. So
that's wonderful. And then you also had some recommendations for tier two and tier three ideas.
Yeah. So again, for our students at risk, just including if you're having a group for tier three, and ask the teacher, you will win so many points and they'll really appreciate if you ask them, is there anybody else who that would benefit from this handwriting group or this whatever group you're doing? Is there anybody else that would benefit? Because then all of a sudden you're helping a tier two student and you've got some peers for your kids with disabilities. Again, not doing more, but doing differently, but just putting that lens on.
And then your tier three, obviously, this is where we're focusing in on specific
IEP goals. Yes.
Yeah, specific IEP goals. And this is what we were talking about earlier about identifying what the goal is going to be labeled, because you have to identify the goal. And it's not, you know, OTs are just not the fine motor, visual motor coordination people.
Right.
The sensory processing people, there's a lot more in our scope of practice.
Yes.
What I really enjoy about being in the school system, mm-hmm. as opposed to the medical model, and there's nothing wrong with the medical model. There's, you know, some people really like that. It's just for me, I like being in the context of where those kids are used, where those people are using their skills. I think that that is really just, you know, to me, that is very special. And I feel that I'm really benefiting somebody when I'm working right in their context, right where they're using those skills.
The one thing I wanted to say about tier three is that I really want to encourage people to integrate their services into the natural settings of school, which would include the classroom, but it's also the cafeteria, the recess, the computer room. Art class is one of my favorite places to go. Think of all the OT skills that happen in there. I went into orchestra class, loved it. Don't know anything about music, but I do know a lot about fine motor, rhythm, regulation, all those kinds of things that I could help the orchestra teacher with. We need to have our kids with disabilities included. It's actually a social justice right, okay? There's an interesting study that came out from Milner and Kelly that interviewed students with disabilities about how they felt being in a community school. And what they reported breaks my heart. They feel in, but not of school. That they are physically proximal, but socially distant. And that will impact what happens to them after graduation. So as OTs, we need to understand that, and we need to work towards inclusion, look long-term. So I think when you're thinking about your tier three kids, think about how you can see them in the natural setting. Even if it's a small group with some peers, working towards a large group, get your foot in the door with that teacher that you have a great relationship with. She's going to talk to other teachers, or he's going to talk to other teachers about how it works.
Well, Carol, thank you so much for coming today and meeting with me. I always love talking to you, and Every Moment Counts is a program that was started by one of my professors, Sue Basic, and it's interesting that I think her pilot program my daughter was involved in, which I found so interesting. Life comes full circle, I guess. And it's so great to hear how far it's come and how really, if as OTs, we need to look at the laws and legislation and what it says and what it means to our scope of practice. So thanks for coming today. Really appreciate it.
I love talking with you, Jennifer. I love OTs. I think we do great work. Just everybody keep it up, and you know, small changes make a big difference.
Thank you. I'm so happy that I had Carol on to discuss ESSA and IDEA and how this really affects our scope of practice as occupational therapists. There is a ton of resources that are going to be included in the show notes. Resources and articles that Carol referenced in our discussion, both in part one and part two. Feel free to look into that. The Every Moment Counts website is truly a treasure. You're not going to get through it in just one gander. There is a lot of material in there and a lot of free resources. So use them. Thank you so much for listening to the OT Corner. I really appreciate you coming by and listening, and have a wonderful, wonderful week.
Thank you for listening to the OT Corner with Mrs. K. Feel free to join the OT Corner community by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. If you have a topic you want to hear about, or if you would like to come on the show, feel free to contact Jennifer at theotcorner.com. We would love to hear from you. All information from the show is listed in the episode notes. We know you can listen to anyone, so we appreciate you stopping by. Until next time, thanks again.